You're listening to the Sisters in Loss podcast, a faith-based podcast that spotlights Black women who replace silence with storytelling around pregnancy and infant loss and infertility. Black women experience miscarriage and stillbirth 4 to 5 times more likely than white women, according to the NIH and CDC. Whether you've experienced a miscarriage, infant loss, stillbirth, are trying to conceive, or have an infertility diagnosis, you will learn about resources and strategies to heal, gain clarity, peace, hope, and find an empowering path forward after loss. I'm your host, Erica M. McAfee, and you will hear me interview sisters in loss who have healed from such a painful and traumatic experience by sharing their testimonies and stories to inspire and help others turn their pain into their purpose. Now let's get started.
All right. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you.
I'm excited to have you both. So I would love for both of you to introduce yourselves, share a little bit about yourself and what you do.
My name is Alicia Harris, and I am a licensed professional counselor and a licensed addictions counselor for the state of South Carolina. I'm currently a doctoral student at the University of the Cumberlands, and my interest of research is addressing pregnancy loss among Black moms and what counselors should do from a cultural perspective. And so I'm so glad to be here.
And I am Vanessa Woodward. I am Alicia's daughter, of course. I'm 25. I am a mom. I've been pregnant twice. Unfortunately, the first one did end in a loss. I am currently a stay-at-home mom to my one-year-old son, and I am a support coordinator for Postpartum Support International.
Yeah, so obviously, you know, this is a passion for both of you all to really share your stories in this manner. So what I want to do is for you to take us back on your journey to motherhood. And then, Alicia, I would love for you to kind of fill in the gaps from a mother's perspective. So Vanessa, start us out. Really take us back on your journey to motherhood. Share with us your story, your child loss story, but also you can also share a little bit about your journey to having your son, your rainbow baby as well.
Yes, of course. So I can remember being so little, like just obsessed with babies. Like I love babies, love kids, like always wanted to be a mom. So in 2019, my now husband and I found out that I was pregnant, I think, 2 days before my birthday, actually, in October. My birthday is the 30th, so we found out the 28th. And so, you know, we were like, oh my gosh, how old was I then? I think I was 23 at the time. So at first, you know, we're like, oh my God, how are we going to tell our parents that we're pregnant? And so we kind of kept it to ourselves. We're like, okay, we're going to wait until the first appointment, and then we're going to let them know, you know, that we're having a baby. And so, you know, time went on. Got to our first appointment and the sonographer, the ultrasound tech is like, okay, I'm seeing the sac. I'm seeing one baby and okay, I'm seeing two babies. And so by the time we got to the second baby, we're both looking at each other like, there's no way that we're about to have twins. And so she keeps going and she keeps going and she's like, oh, just hold on 1 second. So my husband is like, please don't tell me that there's a third baby in there. And she's like, yeah, I think it is. So we were pregnant with triplet girls. They were all in one sac, so they would have been identical triplet girls. So after that appointment, we were like, forget it, because we were going to wait until Thanksgiving to tell our parents. After that first appointment, we were like, forget it. Like, everybody, we need to know because we need all hands on deck. We're about to have three babies. So we told his parents, we told my mom. She was in hysterics, of course. Everyone is like in shock, like, stop playing. First of all, you're not pregnant. Second of all, really, you're pregnant with triplets? No, but yes, we actually were. So shortly after that, I started having really bad hyperemesis. And so I think I was probably in the hospital 3 or 4 times because it was so bad. I couldn't keep water down, let alone some crackers or a meal. So shortly after we found out is when things kind of started happening. We had to see a
It's a maternal fetal medicine specialist.
Yes, thank you.
Or higher
fetal medicine, yes. So as soon as, you know, we found out we were having the triplets, they automatically sent us there. So the first thing that the doctor told us was that, you know, a lot of times with multiples, twin-to-twin transfusion syndrome happens. Basically, one baby is getting all the nutrients, blood, oxygen, and the other one is deprived. So he just let us know, like, just be aware that we are wishing for the best, but ultimately this could happen. And the fact that you're having three just multiplies that even more. And so I want to say in January, we had an appointment and they were starting to see that that was happening. And so they actually sent us to Johns Hopkins to see a specialist to see. There's a surgery that they can do for twin to twin transfusion syndrome. I think they sever one of the blood vessels within the cords. So we were thinking we may have to get that done. But by the time we went to maternal fetal medicine on, I think, a Monday, and we were in Baltimore at Johns Hopkins on a Thursday, one of the triplets had already passed away by the time we got there. So at that point, there really was nothing to do. And the specialist was saying we could still do the surgery, but at this point, the surgery is probably not even going to help anything. So at that time, the other two that were left, they were still looking pretty good. One was smaller than the other, but they still appeared to be viable. So we left Johns Hopkins on a Thursday, and I had another appointment with maternal fetal medicine on that Monday. And by the time we got there Monday, both of the babies had passed. So all three of them had passed, I guess, within like a week's time. Now, this was before COVID and everything, but for some reason, the hospital was full at that time. So from the time we found out that they passed away, I had to wait 3 days, 4 days until I could deliver them. And I had to go through labor, go through contractions, and actually deliver them.
How far along were you at this point?
I was 17 weeks. Yeah. So that was pretty traumatic in itself. Had out of this world contractions, and then had to push them out. And I did hold them, and they were probably like the size of my hand. So thankfully my doctor pointed us in the right direction for, a child loss, therapist, like counseling. And so we did decide to take that step to, you know, get the grief counseling for child loss and everything like that. And it really did help. But I always think, and we always discuss, like, had it not been for him, they would have given their condolences and then sent me on my way. Mm-hmm. And then that just would have been it. So it was difficult. I still think about it now because everything just happened so fast. I really don't think that me and my husband fully like processed everything that was going on.
So what happened after you actually gave birth to them? What did they do at the hospital?
After I gave birth, now before they before I went into labor, they were worried about my iron. My iron was severely low. And so when my water broke and everything, I lost so much blood. I had to get a blood transfusion in the midst and after pushing them out. And then I ended up having to have a DNC afterwards because they just weren't sure that they had got all the placenta and everything else like that. So after I had the DNC, you know, they brought me back to my room. My two nurses who actually helped me deliver my son, my two nurses, you know, they gave their condolences, made sure that I was settled in and then they left. And then that was it. The next day, a nurse came in, gave me my discharge paperwork, told me what not to do. Don't lift anything. Don't have sex. Don't do this. You know, the routine things that they do. And then that was it. My mom brought me home and everyone went home. And it was just me and my husband looking at each other like we came home with no babies, like not even one out of three.
And then remember you, they asked at one point what decision you wanted to make in terms of burial or cremation. Mm-hmm. And then what did the hospital tell you with that?
Now, you're going to have to help me because I was still drugged up, so I don't really remember. I do know that they gave me the option.
They gave the option either she could choose to have a memorial burial service. Mm-hmm. Or she could choose cremation.
But I didn't get to keep any of their remains if they were cremated. With cremation. So they did, what they did do, if you did not want the remains for a burial, they had a stone engraved and they put all of their footprints on it. So I did receive that, but I didn't have any option to keep anything. Like, you know, if I wanted to keep their ashes and put it in a little necklace or a bracelet, or that, they don't give you that option at all when they're that small.
Wow. Wow. Which is so crazy because the option is probably there.
Right.
And the hospital didn't provide more options of funeral homes in the area that could have done that. Because funeral homes do bury babies that small and do cremate babies that small for free. For in most cases.
And they told us that if we wanted the remains, I think that would have been a charge.
Yeah, for some hospitals, they do try to charge you, but ultimately, you know, a lot of funeral homes won't charge you, you know, depending on the baby. So it's unfortunate that they didn't even give you other options. They just gave you those two and then made you choose, you know, versus.
This was before I had even delivered.
Correct.
Fill out all of this information.
Yeah. Yeah, that's tough. So how did you begin the grieving process? And Mom, you can hop in because obviously I'm sure you were a part of this mm-hmm. part of the process as well.
Yeah. Like I called her so many times because me and my mom are close. And if I'm crying, I know I can call her and mm-hmm. she's going to know what to do. So there were so many times where I just called her and she would answer the phone and I would just be crying, not saying anything. And she would just reassure me like, you know, this is just your process. And if you feel like you need to cry, then cry and it's okay. And my husband, he was a great support as well. Like we would cry together, just sit and cry. And, you know, we always make it a point to mention them. And, you know, not feel afraid like, oh, we don't, you know, want to speak about them. We talk about them pretty frequently. And even with my son now, like I have certain things from my triplet pregnancy that are still like around the house. So when he holds, I would say like, oh, these are your sisters, or we see butterflies like, oh, look at your, you know, like I just try to remember them because they were very much real and they were very much loved by our whole family and they hadn't even gotten here yet. And then in addition, the counseling, I think I maybe did 5 or 6 sessions with the foundation is called Kindermorn. So I saw a counselor, same lady, she was amazing. Her name was Melissa. And I saw her for probably 3 months. And that helped me a lot, a lot, a lot. And so after getting over the initial sadness and grief, my husband and I were like, we want our baby. So I wouldn't say we were actively trying, but we weren't actively preventing either. And so we lost triplets in January, and then we found out that I was pregnant in July. So it was literally like 6 months time. We got pregnant with our rainbow baby, and it was great. My whole pregnancy was fine. I was barely sick. Of course, in the first trimester, I had a few times where I had some vomiting and things like that. But really, my whole pregnancy was great. I felt great. I felt like I looked great. I was glowing. It was just amazing. And so he was born in March. He was born on March the 12th. And he has just been everything and more that I could have possibly wanted, thought about, dreamed of, everything.
Love it. So how did you support Vanessa through this grieving process? Obviously, experiencing child loss is devastating for the actual birthing person, the mother. But how is it for grandma? How did you navigate through the child loss?
So I'll take you back to when we found out, well, when I found out she was expecting. And yes, I was a little hysterical because all I kept hearing was three babies. Like, wow. And during the time when she was sick, I live in Columbia, South Carolina. She was in Fort Mill, but the hospital was in Charlotte, North Carolina. So if I got a call, like I'm at the hospital, I just dropped whatever I was doing and drove up there. Now, her husband was there, but you know, it's something about mamas. Like,
yeah.
I don't need the report over the phone. I need to come and lay eyes and make sure the medical staff is doing what they need to do, that sort of thing, right? So what she forgot to say as well is that during that time from between November and January, she lost like 17, 18 pounds.
I lost a lot of weight.
And so I was very, very concerned, especially when they could not get the hyperemesis under control. And so we go through that. When we went to Boston, they flew up, her and her husband flew
Baltimore.
Her and her husband flew there the day to get to the appointment. And I'm in the airport about to board the plane to go to Baltimore to meet them. And I get the call saying one of the triplets has passed. So now I'm in the airport just bawling my eyes out. Like, oh my God, what are we going to do? And I get to Baltimore and, you know, we talk about next steps and what their plans are. And then we return and I'm thinking, okay, this has happened. What's going to happen when we get back home? So now I'm at work when she has her follow-up appointment and she calls me screaming and crying. And it was a cry that I had never heard from her before, even as a baby. And she said, Mom, they have all died. Well, Erica, I lost it at work. Like, what are you telling me? And the thing that just kept bothering me was they just kept saying, well, sometimes these things happen. And I'm like, that's not an answer. I need more information. And her doctor says to her, well, it wasn't your fault. I don't want you to think it's your fault. There was nothing that you did. And I'm like, but we're not even saying it's her fault. I need y'all to tell me what happened.
Right. So and also, sorry, I didn't interrupt you. I just remembered something. Also, when we were at the appointment and found out that the other two had not made it, the ultrasound tech, she, of course, looked. She said, unfortunately, I don't see a heartbeat. Let me go get the doctor. Well, the doctor comes in. Now, this is a maternal fetal medicine doctor that I had not. He is the one that spoke to us at our initial appointment, but the rest of our appointments, we were with a woman. So he comes in and he's just very like nonchalantly, yeah, I'm so sorry. Yeah, the hospital's going to be calling you to schedule when you can come and then you will have to deliver them. And like it was very like cut and dry, nonchalant, like, we're sorry.
Mm-hmm.
And then that was it.
And so they tell her this, and she calls me after, you know, and says, I got to deliver. And I'm in my head thinking, oh, okay, you're going tonight because they told you today. So you're going to go to, no, I have to wait until Friday. Well, I started having a problem because, like I said, I'm a licensed counselor, and I'm in my head like, is anybody assessing her emotional and psychological well-being right now? Because you have someone that is, you know, literally walking around with dead fetuses in their womb, and you're telling them they have to wait 3 to 4 days. And even on that Friday, they said they would call with the time for us to go. So again, I dropped what I'm doing. I'm up there with them, and they never call. Like, we're waiting to say, okay, go now. So at that point, it was about 3:30, 4 o'clock in the afternoon. Mm-hmm. And I said, we're calling. And that's when I got on the phone. And not to say that she doesn't know how to use her voice, because she does. But that clinician side of me, it was just like, okay, obviously you guys are not making the connection here. You don't try to separate the physiological from the psychological. This is a psychological issue that she is still walking around with these babies inside of her. And so after that, then they said, okay, go to the hospital. So we get to the hospital, and as a mother, I'm trying to separate the clinician from the mother, and not only the clinician from the mother, from the grandmother, because these are my grandbabies that have just died. But at the same time, as a mother, this is my baby, and I have to be there for her. So I don't have time to cry. I don't have time to, you know, wonder about my, you know, emotional well-being, or so I thought. I had to be strong and support her, because at the end of the day, that's all she had, was her village, right? So the village has to come together and make sure everything was done. And so during that time, I am still in my head thinking, okay, any minute a social worker or someone will come in and assess her well-being, her mental and emotional well-being. Well, that never happened. And as she delivered those babies and she held those babies, and I was in the room with them, what I tell you, my heart has never ripped in half like it did. Because I was standing there, and I remember telling myself, Alicia, don't start that crying. She needs this right now. Don't turn away. Don't look away. Just stand. And I think sometimes people find it hard to stand in silence. But at that moment, she didn't need her mother saying anything. She didn't need the clinician trying to provide, services. She just needed someone to stay in that moment with her, while she said whatever she needed to say to her babies, while her husband said whatever he needed to say to his babies. And that's what I did. And I asked her, I remember asking her, because they asked her, did she want clergy to come in? And she said, no. And I said, Vanessa, you don't want anyone, you know, from clergy to come in to pray with you? And she was like, I don't need clergy from the hospital. I have you.
She is my clergy.
So I was like, okay, so there's another hat, you know, and but going through that experience with her, a lot of emotions came up. One was anger, because I said, if I hear one more time, sometimes these things just happen, I'm going to flip out. So there was anger for the lack of regard of providing an explanation. And in my mind, it made me feel like they thought we would not understand. She would not understand that. And to me, that was very insulting. Two, to know that she was going to deliver babies that she would never get to take home. And there were no preparations in place to help her begin to address that right in the moment. Now, they did place her on the side of the maternity ward where the babies are not. Mm-hmm. And but to just wheel her into her room and go away, it was unacceptable. And then three, as her mother and as a clinician and a grandmother, I look back and I say to myself, all of us in that room, mother, clinician, doctor, nurses, we all thought we knew what was best for her. But none of us, myself included, and I've since apologized mm-hmm. to her, none of us, Erica, took the time and said, Vanessa, what do you need us to do? I thought, I'm her mother. I know what needs to happen. You know, I'm a clinician. I know y'all need to take care of this. I'm a grandmother. I know, but none of us turned and said, Vanessa, what do you need us to do? And as a mother, even, I didn't say, Vanessa, do you even want me in the room? That was a very vulnerable time for her. She's exposed. Yes, she's my baby, but she's a grown woman. She's exposed and she has all these people in there. And how do you afford her dignity in a time like that? But we were all thinking about what we thought was best. And that really is what drives me, because after that, I got home and I thought to myself, how many other Black women are dealing with this? And it just started going from there. And just in general conversation with friends and colleagues, and I bring it up and then I hear story after story. Oh, I too suffered a loss. And this is the way I felt. And this is the way I did not feel supported. And it was like, you've got to be kidding me.
Wow. That is so powerful. I don't know if I've ever heard it articulated that way from a parent, that, you know, I'm doing what's best for me or what I think she needs, but I never asked her. Mm-hmm. And now as I reflect back on my own journey and my experience, I don't know if I ever was asked either. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that is a part of being seen, being heard, the consent right. that's needed in those birthing spaces right. to make us feel like we are empowered and that our voices matter in those spaces. But not only that, you know, especially when you're overcome with this debilitating grief and this yeah. trauma that you're experiencing, it's even hard to process that too. It's like, well, you know, I'm making things happen, but sometimes, you know, it's about us sitting and understanding and really trying to understand exactly what just happened and not thinking we're just in a dream and in a nightmare. And essentially that's always what goes back in my mind when I reflect back on that trauma. I'm like, mm-hmm. I always thought it was a nightmare and I was waking up from this dream, but it was not a dream. It was very much so reality that we were both experiencing. So as you transitioned and got pregnant again, how was that experience? Because it wasn't that far removed, right? Like you were still grieving as you had went through additional pregnancy. Was the hyperemesis, or HG is the proper name for it, was it still a concern in your rainbow baby pregnancy? How was your pregnancy?
It was at first big, because, you know, they say when you're pregnant with a girl, you're probably going to be more sick than you are if you're pregnant with a boy. So, of course, before we knew what I was having, I was like, oh, God, like, Lord, you can give me anything else. Please just not that HG. Like, it is the worst feeling in the world. So I was sick a few times, but as the weeks went on, I think both me and my husband could tell, like, okay, this isn't like anything that we dealt with the first time. So that wasn't too much of a worry, but everything else was definitely like, all right, we're going for round two. Hopefully, you know, everything is fine. And I kind of had to get her together, because when I told her, she was just like, well, y'all don't feel like this is too soon. And I was like, that's insensitive for you to be saying because, yes, you're mom and grandma, but you have not experienced. And when you do experience, it just makes the want for a child even more, especially with somebody that you love. So after that, she was good, and my in-laws were too. But I think everybody was like, after every appointment, I couldn't even get out of the appointment good. They're like, all right, what'd the doctor say? What's going on? How's the baby doing? You heard the heartbeat? What's going on? What are they saying? Everything looks good. So,
and I know when I said that to her, it came from a place of nervousness.
Mm. Yeah.
Like, I don't want her to go through that again.
Yeah.
More. And then I had to be honest, I don't want to go through that again, you know? And so it was just because I was dealing with the grief of lose. And that's when I realized, hey, grandparents, you know, they experience mm-hmm. grief too, but you're so torn because you don't want to appear selfish in the moment and say, hey, I'm grieving, because you know she's grieving. So you push your feelings to the side. And I went and saw a therapist to handle my stuff on my own without projecting it on her. But when she told me they were pregnant again, I got so nervous, like, oh my God, I don't want her to experience that again. So that's where that came from.
It was definitely
so real. I mean, y'all
details for everybody.
I was thinking of exactly how my mom was.
Yes. Well, I was
exact same way, like, oh my God. And I'm just like, hey, Michelle, you're projecting. My mom's name is Michelle. You're projecting on me.
Right.
Like, hold on. I'm good with it. I'm in a good
right.
journey.
Yeah. And we're so close that when she said it, it was like, oh, let me back up. And so a lot of times I was just behind the scenes, like, Lord, please don't let her go through this again. Please, just please. So every visit, I'm like, what's going on? What they say? How you feeling? What you need? You said, my back is hurting. Okay, I sent her a yoga video to do stretching. Whatever you needed, I'm there, you know? And so thankfully we have, and he's such a sunshine.
Yeah,
but she has a little boy and I'm so excited.
I think ultimately it brought everyone together. Mm-hmm. Like, it brought us so much closer together. And, you know, it's something just so unfortunate that happens way more often than I realized until it happened to me. And, you know, just telling my story, because me and my husband, we were openly saying, like, we're having, like, Instagram and all that. So when everything happened, like, I was open about things that happened. And I had so many people saying, like, I've had a miscarriage too. Mm-hmm. Or a nurse that I know, she works in the NICU. And she's just like, you just don't even realize how taboo of a topic it is. And I personally don't understand why it is such a taboo subject to talk about. And it happens so often. It happens like people change their clothes, take a shower. Like, it happens so often. And it has become something to me that's, I want to get to the bottom of, why does this happen so often? And I know what I've been through, and I need to be that support advocate person for someone else, because I know what it feels like. And you don't often feel seen, you don't often feel heard, you don't know how to feel, you don't know how to process what has happened. I am blessed that I was able to want to try again to have another child so soon after losing the triplets, but some people don't have that luxury.
Absolutely. So were you able to find out any details about exactly what happened to the triplets? They didn't give you any idea. Was it the twin-to-twin transfusion?
I personally say that that's the reason why, but we never got a definite solid answer like, oh, it definitely was a twin-to-twin transfusion. It definitely was this. It definitely was that. We never got a hard answer as to what exactly happened. We got to the doctor and they had passed and that was it. And I feel like we did elect to do, didn't they do some sort of testing afterwards to try to?
You didn't elect to do it. Okay. And that was the other thing. It was in that moment. I think
that was an extra charge to
it. But it was in that moment of your emotions are high. You already know the expected end, right? You know you're going to go through labor and your babies are already dead. And now they're asking you these questions that she's numb. Mm-hmm. She's not even making that connection at that point. And so they did ask if they wanted an autopsy, and she said no. But I knew, I said, oh, I wish they would have asked that maybe after.
Right.
Exactly. Right. And so, and as a mom, you know, she's an adult. I can't intervene and say, well, yes, you need one. And I think that was the part where the timing of it all just wasn't good in terms of making those decisions.
Yeah, that is so key too on how it's presented, the tone it's presented, mm-hmm. how empathetic and compassionate the providers are when they're asked, you know, telling these answers. And then obviously that entire process that you went through up until you actually getting admitted to the hospital and actually delivering, you know, some people are more timely with it in that they're not going to wait until you wait a couple days until you're forceful to say, no, I'm not waiting. I need to come into the hospital and this process needs to move further. Right. So there's obviously a lot of gaps in the system that needs to be closed on how to deal with people who are given bad news or given the bad news, but also what to happen as far as treatment and really some palliative like bereavement care.
Exactly.
After exactly what happens when someone does experience a loss in any trimester, because we're not even talking about just the second trimester.
Exactly.
The first trimester, you know, what are we doing to make sure that person is really experiencing a quality level of care as they would if they were taking a baby out of the hospital. So
exactly.
You know that there are gaps there, but obviously a lot of your research that you're going to be doing will help address some of those gaps. And, you know, a lot of the things that are happening within legislation too is going to help address some of these gaps that are there as well. But I would love for you both to really talk about how you have really navigated the journey up until now. You know, obviously we're still in COVID. I mean, obviously the pandemic is still going on, even though it feels like everyone thinks it's opening. But I think what people have learned to do this year, at least I feel like people are just living with it and understanding that, you know, they still can be cautious, but they still can be cautious and still go out and still enjoy life. But the part of that is that we're still in a sense of collective grief and trauma. Mm-hmm. I don't think we've actually processed COVID as a whole. I still think we got some time to be removed from that. But even when you experience, you know, losses like you both experienced with the loss of these babies, it adds on to the trauma that we've experienced with COVID. And it's just, it's like compounded. And it doesn't negate from it, but it just compounds it. And if we don't process it, it's going to show up in other areas. So how have you all been navigating through this endemic and through your own personal grief and healing journeys?
Well, I will say that initially, and this is, she delivered the babies on a Friday. Mm-hmm. And I stayed at the hospital, and I took her home Saturday, and then I came home and I showed up for work on Monday. And I guess it was just, and at that point I knew it was robotic. Like, but the unfortunate thing is that no one around me, and I talk about like my leadership at work, tapped me on the shoulder like, you need to go home. You've suffered a loss and you needed to grieve. Mm-hmm. And so I was back at work. I was back in school and things were going. And I remember feeling like, you know, at NASCAR, those cars go around that track about 200 and something miles an hour. Well, if a tire blows out or something happens and they end up on the side of the road, they have to go into the cockpit, to the pit to, you know, get the car repaired. But the other cars continue going at 200 miles an hour. That's what I felt like. Like I was in the pit watching everybody else continue on with their life as if nothing had happened. And I had stalled out and could not get myself going again. And that's when I realized, okay, it's time for you to go and talk to someone about the grief that was specifically for a grandmother, not just a mom, but how did you feel watching your granddaughters, who you'll never get to hold, kiss, change their diaper, feed them oatmeal? How did that make you feel? And I had to get real with myself. You know, we hear things like clinician, heal thyself. Well, I could not. And so I had to seek out assistance. And so now when those things come up, I'm really, really intentional about addressing where that's coming from, because grief doesn't just go away overnight. You have those grief spirals where everything will be going fine. And then all of a sudden you're like, oh my God, how did I get here? And I'm intentional about processing and addressing that and identifying where the trigger has come from. And I think that that has been most helpful. And I have dedicated my life to addressing this issue. And I think that not only does that give me purpose, but it gives me drive. So every time I'm able to discuss these matters and dig deeper, it gives me that self-fulfillment. Like, this is for Genesis, Journey, and Jordan. Those were the triplets' names. And everything I do is for them. It's in remembrance of them. And that's how I continue to go forward.
Oh, that was good, girl.
I love it. I love you, Vanessa.
I would pretty much say the same. Like, with her being a counselor, she was very, you know, not pounding me with it, but just like, how do you feel about counseling? Do you feel like you need to go? And if you feel like you need to go, it's okay. But do what you feel like you need to do that's going to help you. So I did go to counseling. That helped a lot. My husband came with me a few times, and we did the grief counseling together. And I will thankfully say, like, I always used to thank God, like, thank you, God, that I'm not worse off than I thought that I would be, because it was hard and I was devastated and sad, and I would definitely have my days like I'm just a wreck. But I feel like it could have been much worse for me, especially mentally, going through everything that had just happened and trying to process everything that happened. And like my mom said, like, my husband went back to work a few days afterwards. So literally not long after we went through all this, COVID happened. So we're all at home. I was at home by myself all the time. Gave me so much time for my mind to wander and wander and wander and think about, I'll never hold them, or I'll never take them to their first day of school, or I wonder what they would have looked like, what their hair would have been looked like, what their personalities would have looked like. So some days it was really, really, really hard. But I will say, speaking up about when I was having a hard time, either calling my mom or when my husband got off work, just letting him know, like, I just had a rough day today. And we talk about our feelings and the loss and the what ifs and everything like that. And I will say that that is really like what helped me so much. And just being around the people that I love and love us helped so much. And so that's part of the reason why we didn't really do any prevention or anything like that. In my mind, it was just, whenever God sees fit for us to have a child, then it'll happen, whether it's a month from now or a year from now. I was just open to any, just being open and just letting life go on and play out how it was supposed to.
That's awesome. I would love for you all to share with our listeners any encouraging words on this journey. Obviously, what I love the most about your dynamic is how open and transparent you both are in relationship. And not all mother-daughter relationships are like this,
yeah.
Where there may have been, the way I look at it too, is that, you know, a lot of, especially Black mom and daughter's relationships can be complicated, can be complex, especially as you navigate through from being little to teenage years to being an adult. But when you add on this other level of trauma and grief, it can either fracture the relationship or it could bring you closer together with an outside resource like therapy and counseling, and being able to be to really understand how you're feeling and being able to pinpoint those triggers, as you all mentioned before, and you're able to communicate with one another. And I truly feel when a mom heals herself, she heals her children. And it's the thing that I always come back to with my, how I've been mothered with my own personal, my own mother, because I always feel like, you know, whenever she's been in therapy or she's consistent with her therapy journey, that it heals me every time I talk to her, because she's able to articulate exactly how she's felt about how all the trauma that she's been through in her life, but also about the trauma of my losses and how it's impacted her. Right. So I would love for you all to just leave some encouraging words with those who may be listening and just love your dynamic and are navigating through tough journeys as a mother and a daughter, or for those who may not have mothers here physically, they may have mother figures or people in their lives. How can they really, you know, strengthen that dynamic within those mothering relationships, so that they can have these open conversations about how they're navigating through grief and healing?
As a mom, I will say this. I had to look at my relationship with my mom. So I hear you, Erica, when you talk about that. And it wasn't always perfect, right? It wasn't, I'm not saying it was the worst, but it wasn't what I wished it could have been. But there was a point in my life that was very pivotal with my relationship with my mom, when I stopped looking at her as my mom and I start seeing her as a woman and a Black woman who was born in 1934, who dealt with segregation and desegregation, who was very dark skinned. So she dealt with colorism. She was from the South. You know, I had to look at her and see her in her humanity, and my heart began to break because I saw a woman that faced a lot of odds, a lot of barriers and obstacles, but she persevered. And so as a mother, I took that over to my daughters and my son, but I had to also know that I could not expect them to be built like I was. You know, I can't say, oh, you should get up from here and do that, because when I had you, I did X, Y, and Z. I tried that one time with her and we had to have a long discussion. And I apologize, because I had to do certain things because I was in a different place. So, but I can't project that onto her. So not projecting your trauma, your experiences on your children, thinking that you were the mold that they should follow. I wanted her to break that mold and do better, go further, be greater as a mom and as a human being than I ever was. And so I'm real conscious of our relationship, because I know the role that I play now. Although I will forever be her mother, I'm no longer the authoritarian. I'm more of the advisor, if you will, if she seeks my advice. So one other thing that I practice, I don't give unwarranted advice, no matter what it is. I don't tell her, well, you should do this with your son, or you should do this with your husband. If she comes to me for advice, I consult, and then she takes from that what is good for her and discards the rest, and I respect that. And so those boundaries are key, and we have those healthy boundaries where she can utilize her voice but it's not to the point of disrespect. Mm-hmm. And I can hear her and then take that and apply it accordingly in terms of how I interact with her. And I have a level of respect for her as a woman and as a mother that really makes me proud to be her mom.
And I will say, I was basically going to say everything that you said. Girl, you just threw me for a loop. Support, 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 support. The moms out there that are going through, having a hard time, have had a loss, like, you need support. You may not think you need it and you may not want it at some times, but it is important to have that support, whether it be your mother, your parent, auntie, cousin, a therapist, anybody. You need that support, and it is important for you to understand that you can speak up about what it is that you need in order to get through what you're going through and make sure that you have people around you that are going to be supportive, that are going to listen to what you have to say, that are going to listen to how you're feeling and ultimately want to help you on your journey to healing and your grief journey and everything else. And I will also say that whatever you are feeling, you have every right to feel, and all those feelings are warranted. Whether you have question, I question God so many times, like, what was the purpose? Because the most annoying thing that people would say was, oh, everything happens for a reason. And it's just like, my kids just died. I don't want to hear everything happens for a reason. Like, God, what was the purpose of me getting pregnant just to lose them? That what was the purpose in that? Mm-hmm. Now, granted, I will say, as time has gone on and as we've had our son, I've started to kind of see, like, if we would have had triplets, I would be insane. Like, it would have just been, life would just be so much different than what it is now. And so I kind of look back and say, you know, okay, some things do happen for a bigger purpose and you may not realize it until later on, but you just have to live in the moment and process what exactly is going on and what exactly do you feel like you need at this moment. Do you need to scream? Do you need to cry? Do you need a hug? Do you just need to spill out all of your feelings and just have someone listen and not even say anything at all? Mm-hmm. So I would just say, you know, seek the love and support and any type of outside support you may need. Please don't be afraid to talk to a therapist. If there's no one in your life that you're comfortable sharing or you feel like they may not understand you, please see a therapist. There are so many out there. And I promise you, if I hadn't went to therapy, I probably would not have been able to move forward and go through my grief journey as I did.
I tell people all the time, it's okay to have Jesus and a therapist.
Yes.
It is okay.
Yes. Jesus gives us wisdom. Use the wisdom to right. say, maybe I need to go and talk right. to somebody. Yes.
Jesus and therapy. We need it all. We need to pray.
Right. Yes.
Empower the therapist to tell us how to feel our feelings.
Exactly. And one more thing I wanted to say, please advocate for yourself when you're going to these appointments. When you're in any type of healthcare interaction, if you have any questions that you have, ask them because they are entitled to answer them or answer them to the best of their ability. But if you have questions, ask them because obviously it's something that you want to know or you need to know, and you have every right to know. It's your patient right to know anything that has to go on with you and your body and your care.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Well, this has been such a rich conversation. Absolutely love it. You all have been encouraging to me especially as I navigate through a few more interviews with moms and daughters. But now I know how to approach how I'm going to interview my mom. Such a good conversation, because like I said, this is a long time coming for her to share her side of the story. And obviously I've shared my story on this show many, many times before, but her to get her perspective is going to be so rich, because I don't think we do this enough to see how the mothers that carry the child, that's carrying the child, yeah, how they dealt with loss. So this has been such rich, so rich conversation. I would love for you all to, how can we get in contact with you all after this episode? And I know that you have research that you're doing, and I want to be able to be a resource to the community, especially if, as you navigate through that dissertation, I know you're going to need some help. So how can we stay in contact with you both after this episode?
I have a private practice, and the name is Brella, B as in boy, R-E-L-L-A, Counseling Services, LLC. You can also find me on Instagram, and it's Bold Bald Girl, G-U-R-L. That's my name on Instagram. And Facebook is under A. Patricia Harris. So any one of those ways, you can reach me.
And I am on Facebook and Instagram as well. Just search Vanessa, V-A-N-E-S-S-A, last name Woodward, W-O-O-D-W-A-R-D. Both of my profiles are, they're public, they're not private. So if you want to send me a message, anything like that, I will respond. I'm friendly. We can talk about anything and everything. So yeah, that's where you can find me.
Well, thank you both for being on the podcast and sharing your story and your light. It has been such a blessing and such a pleasure.
Thank you so much.
We appreciate the work you're doing, Erica.
Yes.
Because it is very much needed. So thank you for all that you're doing.
Thank you for listening to today's episode. For show notes, go to sistersinloss.com. To stay connected with us and join the Sisters in Loss community and receive my weekly newsletter, please go to sistersinloss.com/newsletter. That is sistersinloss.com/newsletter. Please rate and review this episode, and I will talk to you next week.